Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and sitcoms. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined this week, as always, by my fellow barrier-pushing mavens. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
Dan, it may be a Tuesday, but I've got a case of the Mondays.
I hear you. I hear you. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Fine. I'll do the show, but I'm ordering the lobster.
That's not in our budget.
I left you Ibitakid. I was gonna do Ibitakid, but I thought, no, guy's probably gonna want to take that.
So I here's the thing. I've got three of them. You don't remember me from last night? We locked eyes.
There was
the lobster one, yeah. And Ibitakid, and we had an understanding. Yeah, I have like four of them because I knew you'd spite me.
I usually don't get an entrance, but I guess if I had to pick one this week, it would be either I have no answers. Or
yeah,
everything is meaningless.
Everything is meaningless. Yeah,
yeah.
Also good.
You know what? I'll save the other. I've got one more, but it's from the post credit.
Possibly so. That mime. His tray is getting too heavy. Oh no, his bad back.
Your bad back.
What a weird show. All right, we are here to discuss WandaVision episode 7, entitled, I believe. I wrote this down in my notes without double checking it. But I believe it's entitled Breaking the Fourth Wall. Is that correct?
Yes,
that is correct.
Good. And I think Monsieur Anglais is doing the recap this week.
Not if you're going to treat me like that. He's not. A little bit of respect, man.
Merde. Sacre bleu. Je suis
sacre bleu. Yeah. Yeah. None of which is very Quebecois, but fine. Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you enjoyed those bagels last week.
They were good. I'm still eating them.
Breaking the fourth wall. We open with Wanda lying in bed without Vision. She sits. We cut to her sitting in her living room in pajamas, telling the camera, "We've all been there, you know, rearranging reality." The twin charge into her bedroom because their console has been flitting between realities. We see a nice old school Atari controllers, which I was kind of jazzed about. They wanted to get up, but she's sort of intent on staying in bed. And we see that she's, when she pulls the sheets back, we see that she's still in her costume from the night before. I thought it was a little weird how low the sheets got pulled off, but I realized it's like, well, otherwise it just looks like it could be a nightie. Like, you need to see the costume.
You have to see, you have to see the weird pink leg,
the tights.
Right, you need to, the full body shot to get it. Wanda goes to make breakfast, and the milk bottle is flipping out too. At one point, we see a non-distinct image of a missing child on the carton. Which was, you know,
I tried to pause it and see if it was anything, but you can't, there's no text to
you
make
can't,
out.
No, you can't
it's,
tell. Yeah.
It looks like it's intentionally blurred. Like it's more out of focus than it should be for the shot. I think
something to point out, if you have the captions on, you'll see, and you can kind of vaguely hear it. There's a radio going on in the background and the call sign for the radio is WNDA, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
And the thing that the guy says is, he says, you can't hear him for a while and they don't show the captioning. And then the first thing that they say is showing the captioning is the guy saying, "I hope it's not a thing weighing heavily on your conscience." Yeah. Like, which I thought was very strange.
Yeah. I mean, Quicksilver last week said, it's like, you've done a very good job with the moral implications of this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. There's definitely some subconscious stuff going on. Anyway, Wanda tells the camera that she's not sure what that's about as she tries to put the milk into her cereal. Then we cut to the intro, which this week is a mashup of The Office, Modern Family, and Happy Endings. If you guys haven't seen Happy Endings, the Russo brothers directed it, and it is, I swear to God, one of my favorite sitcoms. Like, it's really good. It's got one of the Wayne brothers, Adam Pally, who we know from the episode of Mandalorian that John and I did together with you, Dan.
Right.
It's just a really funny, pretty basic show, but it's sharp. It's not doing the talk to the camera thing, but it works. It's interesting. I think it only lasted two seasons.
Yeah, it was short, I remember, but I know a lot of people really loved it.
It's not quite Freaks and Geeks level of influential, but it's good. It's like a really, really good show. We open onto the Sword Retreat. The sort of retreat position outside the expanded hex. Hayden tells his team to prepare to launch today. I kind of like the way it's ambiguous what the hell's happening. He says, make sure they've got everything they need and we're going to launch today.
Yeah. Doesn't say what.
Yeah. Like, do you need things to launch missiles? I mean, missile, I guess. But, like, phrased...
They can't go through, right? So it suggests they're launching something into it or at it.
Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Stuff is getting out, clearly, because they can track... Well, A, it's breathable, but forget that, because that's comic book logic. But they can track vision. So they have to have some way of sensing what's going on in the inside. Right. Like, we've seen it on the show, you know? So, cut to Vision waking up at the circus, and he meets up with Darcy for the first time. She thinks he's hitting on her until he zaps her mind back to reality. Then they go off to find Wanda's house to try to work out what's happening. I've scrunched two scenes together there, just temporarily. It works easier. At breakfast, the twins ask about Pietro saying something about re-killing Dad. It's always an awkward question. Wanda tells him to ignore that man. He's not your uncle. And then they're like, well, who is he? And he tells him in a frazzled way that she has no answers. And basically she's sort of coming apart at the seams and tells him that there's no meaning to anything, but make up your own minds. You know, that's
what you do to kids.
Parenting 101.
Mm-hmm. Basically she's woken up with a massive hangover.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she's telling her, and she's being nihilistic to her children. And that's
right.
That's probably the darkest Disney thing you're going to see. Like, if that was written in real life rather than magic, ooh, that's
I always enjoy. One thing I enjoy throughout this show is how they set, you know, a lot of people commented, I think, in the early episodes about the jokes not landing. But I think what's far more effective to me is scenes like this where it's underscored with the sitcom music. But they're saying dark things. And like that for me, that's a sweet spot for me where it's like everything is meaningless. So like, dun, 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 you know, it's like,
why the credits are running and they're yelling at each other.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's really coming together.
I sent you guys a screenshot of, there's like that one creepy bit in the credits with the ransom note saying, I know what you're doing, Wanda.
Yeah. Yeah. We should talk about that in the, conspiracy.
Something's going on.
Cabinet chambers. Like, at this point, we've got to
elevate it.
Convened a government, and that's like that's where the conspiracy goes, in the cabinet. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, breakfast. Agnes drops by just as Wanda is reaching the end of her rope and offers to take the boys away. She makes some quip about buying children. Also, she has a mole, which is kind of witchy.
Yep.
As Agnes and the kids leave, Wanda's room starts to fritz, but she assures the camera that she's fine. Out in the world, Monica and Jimmy are off to meet the engineer, pick up the engineer's kid at least. Jimmy reads an email from Darcy and does a bit of exposition, letting us know Hayden was basically trying to reboot Vision.
Hayward.
Who cares? Hayward. Fine. Yeah. Well, not in my reality. Yeah. So fine. There you go. Hayward. I think, who cares? I know somebody called Hayden, and it probably, my notes auto-corrected it. Anyway, Hayward was trying to reboot Vision, and he wants his sentient weapon back.
Did you see, by the way, something I noticed because I paused to read the email? There's one line in the email that Jimmy does not read, which specifically mentions a decoy communique sent to Vision's office, which I guess would be the email that we saw back in episode
three, I think.
Interesting, because it was like, why send the decoy? Why send a decoy communique unless you are trying to get Vision's attention, maybe?
Well, there's two things, because during that episode, I forget what else happened, but we were unclear as to which action was predicated on what. Because there was the radio that they broadcast to, and then there was the email, and we weren't clear as to which one was supposed to break the boundaries. Do you remember? Like, anyway, from that line that wasn't read out loud and was just on the screen, if you paused it and you're weird about things
like me,
you would see that. I guess what I did the same thing.
Well, I'm doing that now. While, you know, like,
yeah, you have to.
I'm going through these frame by frame almost.
Yeah, I've back spent a lot of time watching left. It. Yeah,
we'll talk about some continuity problems.
I mean, later. Thank God they're half an hour long, or else, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know about that, but that definitely sets up that Hayward is meddling internally in a way, and he's got a way into. If not a way into, some way of broadcasting into the Maximoff anomaly that has not been shared with their heroes, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm. by our heroes, I mean the three people outside. Or, you know, yeah. I'm not counting Wanda here. Probably Vision's a hero too, but I don't know about Wanda. So anyway, we meet the military detachment, and the Martian battle rover rolls out of the truck. after having spent a week being really impressed by Perseverance, this battle rover is like, it looks like the kind of toy that would come with a He-Man. Like it's a pretty badass moon rover. Wanda's reality continues to glitch, and it appears to be getting worse. She can't explain why it's all falling apart, and she can't fix it. Then L. Morris asks, do you think maybe this is what you deserve? Which freaks Wanda out because the interviewer in these shows.
Weird question.
That is a weird question.
It's a total Errol Morris question, though.
I did want to ask also to the part where the house is flickering and changing to different appearances. There's one part where it looks like essentially like a vacant house, like it's been torn down to the studs, which made me wonder is like, has she just been living in like essentially a like burned out house this entire time? That seems plausible.
I suspect things ain't pretty in reality. Yeah. Anyway, so that freaks Wanda out because the interviewer isn't supposed to talk. Then we cut to the ad for this week, which is an ad for Nexus. The ad basically goes, feeling depressed? Try Nexus, a unique antidepressant that will help anchor you to reality or a reality of your choice, because the world doesn't revolve around you. Or does it? I did see somebody... I do want to give a shout out to this. I think, I don't know who it was. Somebody called that the ad for this week was going to be, oh, I know who it was. It was this guy, Eric Voss, whose YouTube I watch sometimes. He called that it was going to be an antidepressant ad, because if you look at the ads, they kind of match the period, and medication you know,
and it's a really good, I mean, there's shots from there that are kind of direct riffs on certain like antidepressant ads, like the shot of the standing, when you're standing in the bed is behind you and then they do the thing, walk away. I've seen that ad. Couldn't tell you what it's for, but I've seen it.
I like that they do the old school technique. Like they basically nailed a bit to the wall and she just walks away from it.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. But also the people, I mean, the people who are in the ad, specifically the woman and the pharmacist, are the same people who have, I think, been in the ads. Every time there have been people in the ads.
Yeah. No, it's the same. It's the same two people the whole time.
Yeah. Which I enjoyed. And then I guess.
And there's a nexus, the connection. There's a nexus connection between the comic books.
Yes.
Because the Nexus, she is a Nexus, in some versions.
Yes.
She's the same person throughout all realities.
Yeah. They literally say,
and then basically has a foot in every reality. So.
Right. Cause the world revolves around her effectively. You know, like this one's much more on the nose than whatever we saw last week, which was, you know, still giving me nightmares. last week was the island one with like the magic
shark.
It was very strange. Cut to Agnes and the twins hanging out. Tommy, I believe, the brainy magic using one, is that right?
I think it's Billy, actually. I think Tommy is the super speed one.
Billy says Agnes is quiet on the inside and it's very noisy elsewhere, sort of hinting that he can't read Agnes's mind. Or that she's a hologram, or not a hologram, you know, like she's a projection of some kind, you know, like that kind of thing. Agnes addresses the camera to tell us that Ralph thinks she sugarcoats things, which is also kind of witchy. You know, coating things in sugar in order to entrap children and bite them is pretty standard operating procedure for witches. I've read the rule book. Monica attempts to breach the barrier with the battle rover, but it fails to break through. The front end turns into an old pickup truck and is thrown out right after Monica jumps clear. Taking off her helmet, Monica looks at the barrier and decides, I can get through. Jimmy is jimmying it up, being, no, don't do this. You keep doing the charging at things and it sucks every time. Anyway, as she pushes herself through the barrier, we see the variations of her that we've seen through through the show. So like the, you know, different decades we've seen her in. We hear dialogue from the Captain Marvel movie and from the show, both talking about Carol and her mother and herself. I think the final line we hear is she is truly an inspiration is from delivered by Jimmy Woo. Mm. And then Monica succeeds in breaking through and sees the world in a broad electromagnetic spectrum. Sort of shakes her head at that, discards her space suit, and starts running towards town.
Nice Star Trek uniform she's got.
Love it. Yeah, I actually cut like three lines of that. I really love that the, you know, she's wearing her, whatever, Under Armour tight sort of thing that would make sense that it would go under a space suit. And so when she discards it, I really like the costume. It is form-fitting without making it seem skin-tight.
Yeah.
It's right. It's just really good.
It kind of reminded me of the classic TNG uniform because it's got like the color across the shoulders and black.
I have exactly that note. Yeah. It's like TNG, but a good, like not season one TNG where everything's really tight and kind of crummy. Like a good riff on the TNG sort of uniform. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I really like it. I like the way she looks in it. She looks action-packed without obviously wearing a superhero costume, despite that basically being her superhero costume. Yeah. I dig it. And a good excuse for it, too, which is wonderful. So, cutting back, we find Vision and Darcy in the funnel cake truck trying to get to Wanda's house, but they're stymied along the way by red lights, road construction, and children crossing. We get a wonderful and delightful scene of Vision addressing the camera. I cannot get enough of these. It is the most I've liked Vision ever. Because it's basically, it feels like you could get Paul Bettany between takes just sitting there and like recounting some kind of story and being like, oh God, I can't believe that.
You know, there's a bit where he like scratches his head at one point that just feels
like, why is he scratching his head?
It makes no sense, but it's
it feels like he's scratching because of the prosthetic. Like, that's why it really feels like Paul Bettany just being like, oh God, this is crazy.
It. They're like, no, that's good. Keep it.
Yeah, I love it. He just seems so natural and so chill and like, I really enjoyed Vision there. Like, he stopped being a robot and started becoming like a, you know, a genuinely good person. And I liked his perspective on the problem too. Like, well, Wanda's been through a lot. I guess we both have, but I can't remember. Like, he's still caring about her most and he's kind of confused about his own existence. And anyway, I really, really enjoyed that scene. There's a couple of them, but for the sake of brevity, I stuck them together and then spent 5 minutes explaining why I did that. Vision and Darcy take the delay to get caught up on the events of Endgame, including him making a habit of getting killed. That does suck. Like, she killed him, then he comes back, and then Thanos digs the Mind Stone out of his head. Is it Mind Stone? Yeah, whatever. The yellow one. Yeah. Yeah, that's not good. That sucks. Anyway, and he's sort of perplexed by that, and he doesn't know what he is now, and he's given a history of, like, he's the Jarvis AI mixed with Banner and Tony, I guess, and then Ultron created his body to be genocidal, and then Thor zapped him. I forget else. Oh, and he's got the Mind Stone.
Yeah.
He's a super everything. Things. Yeah, he's a real mix up there. Monica arrives at Wanda's house and tries to help her by telling her that it's all about Vision. Wanda boots her out of the house, and boom, Monica manages to do a superhero landing, and she's all juiced up. But she de-escalates the situation and starts to make headway with Wanda by telling Wanda not to let Hayward make her the villain. To which Rhonda replies, maybe I already am. Monica shares her loss, the loss of her mother, with Wanda, and they seem to start to connect on an emotional level when Agnes shows up and starts taking Wanda away. Agnes ends up bringing Wanda. So between there, we cut to like another Vision talking to the camera thing. But anyway, Agnes brings Wanda to her home and sits her down for a cup of tea. Wanda sees the half-eaten sandwiches, Mr. Scratchy in his cage, Yo Gabba Gabba, a cicada, I believe, and asks where the twins are, to which she's told they're probably playing in the basement.
yeah, which is perfectly normal. Natural.
Perfectly normal.
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah, an unfinished. Always great to have kids playing in an unfinished basement.
Yeah, I've played in like semi-finished. I mean, it's Canada.
We did. Yeah. But, yeah. You know.
Like the beginning part of the basement is like, okay, that's a really creepy basement that I as a child would not want to go play in. You know,
I remember being afraid. I was afraid of the heater, furnace. The heater in my parents' house. Like because you could go behind it. Like when we would sometimes play hide and seek, and it would be like, am I going to go behind the heater and possibly get killed by something?
Never come out
in
again.
Order to win this game of hide and seek.
Yeah. Like I'm in my mid getting up there 40s now, and whenever I go to my parents' house and I have to go to the basement to, like, you know, inevitably move stuff around for them because they're getting on, I'm like, it still creeps me out. I still don't like this place. It freaks me out. But this basement is like double plus creepy basement.
Yes.
Yeah. So the door creaks and she descends into the basement through a passageway with the vines on the walls and into a stone chamber. There's carvings on the walls, a vaulted ceiling, a book glowing with some form of energy. Agnes walks in petting Mr. Scratchy, and she says, "Nice to meet you. Nice to finally meet you. I'm Agatha Harkness."
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. You didn't think you were the only girl in town with magic, did you? Purple magic envelops Wanda's eyes, and we get a magical montage. It's been Agatha all along. A lovely, jaunty little song. And we see behind the scenes of many creepy instances throughout the show. And we see that Agatha has been manipulating things behind the scenes, including a shot of her in the director's chair, which I think was sort of the icing on the cake to let you know that she's been literally directing the whole thing.
Right.
Like it's as most on the nose as you could get, you know.
And Pietro too, which is important.
And Pietro too, yeah, which is very important. Yeah, he's got like purple magical energy behind his back when he shows up. And then she does the most Wicked Witch of the West thing, and turns out, and your little dog too. And she killed
Sparky.
She killed Sparky, which, man, Catherine Hahn is amazing.
So great.
Just a glee. So I mean, she's doing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're not done yet, but
almost very, very close. I mean, she's basically doing stage acting 6 inches away from the camera. It's like, it's amazing. It's so great. Anyway, roll credits, the way we end every fight these days. After that, after the initial credit push goes, we see Monica approaching Agnes's house. She looks in the windows and then finds a trapdoor into the basement. Opening it, she finds stairs down and purple power flowing along the vines. And then Pietro appears behind her and says, "Snooper's going to snoop." Cut to black, roll the rest of the credits.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum. That house, by the way, is the Bewitched house.
Is it?
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Which is on the back lot of like...
is it the Warner Brothers lot? Or
Warner Brothers, yeah. I was going to say, it's kind of weird.
I've been on the Warner Brothers back lot, and I was definitely... The scenes where they showed the street, I was like, I think I've been there, which made sense, too, because the last week with the Halloween party in the town square... Mm-hmm. I was like, man, it looks like Gilmore Girls, which is also shot on the Warner Brothers backlot.
There's something
about that it's not a, was it a theater? Yeah, it's a theater. Like that corner awning kind of thing. Like, I'm like, that looks so familiar in so many things.
You've seen all of these things like a million times. And I think Warner Brothers has one of the most, I mean, certainly one of the longest standing backlots, but like, it's one of those things that once you've gone there and done the tour there, you'll start to see it in like every single show.
I was reading up on it, but like the garage has been there since like the 40s.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it is. There's all sorts of things there that you will start to pick out of like random shows once you've seen it, because it's just all angles and everything. It's really, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I just came up with a cool business idea. We should release a DVD set of Star Trek Backlot, which has, you know... It's got the gangsters.
The place where you have the gangsters.
It's got Fizbin. It's got ancient Rome. It's got City on the Edge of Forever.
We have no money. We're filming this one on the back lot.
Yeah. And Star Trek. Yeah,
right. I like that we're releasing. I like that we're releasing it as DVDs though, because we're hip and with it.
Exactly. It's, you know what? It should have been. We should have done. I should have said that microfiche thing that they have in the original series. So anyway, so that's it. That's the recap. A little long, but I was saying to you guys before the show.
For this show, it's fine. Like it's almost as long as the episode, but that's okay.
There's like three things that actually happened in this episode, like inciting incidents. Monica's falling apart. Sorry, Wanda's falling apart. Monica gets powered up, and Darcy and Vision team up, and that's effectively it, right? Like those are the three. Oh, and sorry, we get the, obviously we get the reveal of Agnes.
I want to say that I'm very proud of us for, I mean, Agatha Harkness, we've all had bandying around there since one of the earliest weeks, even before the show, probably, I think.
I think, yeah, the trailer, yeah.
And then I think last week I said the button at the end of this week will be the reveal, which it basically was about the villain. Although now we can jump into the conspiracy corner of, is Agatha behind it all? Is there
somebody? I think there's another. Yeah, there's another card to be played here.
I agree. I think there's another player here because it, I mean, it goes to Guy's point about the thing where Agatha doesn't where Billy can't hear her, right? Something. Mm-hmm. So he can hear everybody else because he claims that everything is too loud, and everybody else is real. They're just overwritten,
right?
So either
close to their original personalities, right.
I guess my point is they're not fake people, right? They're real people.
No,
so they have thoughts for him to read. Whereas
either
she is shielding herself because she is also magic, or she is somehow a projection or something not real.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're still, I would imagine that Ralph is actually somebody, and we will get to see Ralph at the very end.
I think he has to be. My running theory, I'm sorry, I'm scooping back through the text I sent Maltz last Friday when, Dan, you were like, you didn't even want us to look at you.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I would have sent all this to you, but, or, you
it's
know,
fine.
I felt it's bad. What do you mean it's fine? You can't be grumpy about me saving you from spoilers and not, okay, anyway.
I just like to be included, even if there's spoilers, but I don't want to read the spoilers. That's too much to ask.
Okay, I'll copy and paste them for you after.
A digest and just paste me all of them later. Okay, fine.
It is.
Yeah, there's quite a lot because we had a good long talk. Long story short, my theory is this. Obviously, Agnes is Agatha Harkness, a witch. We know she's married to Ralph. We know which is at least whatever. Let's just go with the old school concept of a witch, and like if you're Wiccan in some way. Sorry, I don't mean to offend you. Also, please don't boil me alive. So the witches are meant to be married to the devil. Their anniversary was January 2nd, which I've since found out was the date of the Salem witch trials, like the first, the beginning of the Salem witch trials. Huh. So that's significant. She says he looks better in the dark.
Mm.
Kind of creepy. We've never seen him. We've seen Mr. Scratchy and Scratchy.
Old
or Mr.
Scratch.
Yeah. Old Scratch is like a name for the devil. She talked about the mole. She talked about biting children. She talked about sugarcoating things. Or she said Ralph accused her of sugarcoating things, which is means that he's kind of seems like he's more mean-spirited, or at least more assertive in his, like, no wonder you're crazy. Like, it doesn't seem like he would be the kind of person or thing that would be pulling punches.
So I'm just gonna go out on a limb here and say what you think is that he's actually Ralph Astopheles.
I want to know how long you've been long holding show. That in your back
literally
pocket.
Literally about 20 seconds. I was just waiting for the right moment.
Oh, good. You know, I love how you move on your feet. My working theory is that she's, married to Ralph, who is, I don't think it's going to be Mephisto. We'll get to that in a bit. But I do think that some of the more aware characters are members of her coven. That's where I'm not entirely sure about. Like is Dottie and Herb. And the mailman, we see Dottie in this episode. They both stop to watch what's going the conflict.
Yeah.
Although, obviously, there's like some superpowered crap going on. Like, you're not going to keep walking delivering the mail when, you know. Yeah. But neither
he's
do they
been
see.
Identified.
Oh, has he?
He does have an ID on the mailman. Does have an ID on the board?
Part of me.
Okay.
So and
but,
her,
but Dottie doesn't yet.
And we know
her picture's not up. There.
And we know that we see in the flashback Agatha manipulating Herb when he's cutting the hedges.
Yeah,
My reading of that scene where everybody stopped was like Wanda is distracted and can't maintain everything while Monica.
Yeah,
so everything is kind of slowing down and stopping.
Slowly falls down. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh.
But I'm not sure if that's quite right, but that's kind of how I read it.
Yeah, fascinating.
I read it the same way.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so anyway, so we're reduced to Agatha and Ralph, who. I think I think it's going to be Dormammu or
I was wondering the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does have Dormammu does have purple eyes as well.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Runs in the family.
And I'm thinking that cuz A, we know that she's going to tie into Doctor Strange 2. Dormammu may as well be an amalgamation of like the bad mystical magical stuff, you know? Like do we need Mephisto and what's it, Nightmare and any number of other weird ancient old gods? I don't know if we need to introduce that.
Yeah, I don't think they would go.
Well, so the thing that
it's a giant pantheon, and like I don't know if we need to express that. Right. We can just roll it all up into one thing and be done.
My biggest question is: so I did a little bit of reading because I was curious. The book at the end there, sadly, not the Darkhold, which I was a little bit hopeful. That could have been funny.
Do we know that for sure? It doesn't look like
it's
the Darkhold.
It's probably not the Darkhold.
But they recast Pietro. I thought maybe they could also recast the Darkhold.
The suggestion.
The thing that I was thinking was like, I never was really super fond of how the Darkhold looked in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It always
because
it
says
little,
Darkhold across the front of it.
Funky
and
text.
it's like you get a, you know, you get a Star Trek phaser and it says Star Trek.
The suggestion seems to be it's the Necronomicon, which also appears in the Marvel universe and is related
Makes
to the Darkhold.
Sense.
Like, which is a different, it's basically, I think my brief like 30,000 foot overview was that they're both sort of like ancient distillations of the same arcane knowledge, and the Necronomicon does have ties to some of these characters, including Wanda, in various points in the comic mythology. Necronomicon also ties into what I was going to say, which is that there is a Lovecraft like tie-in, I guess, like they mention in some of the things I saw that it ties in potentially to like the Lovecraft old gods style, old one style thing. So possible, I could see them. Mm. That's enough of a, like a, you know, something that people are aware of that I could see them tying into that, but I also can understand why they might want to avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Necronomicon is the Darkhold. Like, I think for the MCU, if you can have a conservation of characters. Like they've already got so many characters and it's hard to keep track of, even for us. If you can amalgamate a bunch of these concepts into one thing that people are going to remember, great. You know, go for it. Just,
I think they mainly don't care enough about what happened in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to like have to hew to that, basically, is my feeling. No.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like, forget it. I honestly feel the same way about the Star Wars cartoon shows, which I enjoy, and I know they're supposed to be canon, but if you want to make a movie that breaks them, I don't think Disney's going to stop you.
I actually think they 100% would, because that stuff is canonical.
yeah
really.
Yep.
I think they would.
I know it's canon, and I don't think
they see the movies as taking primacy over those currently.
I seriously think they do. I really do.
Oh, I actually don't think so, based on the way that, I mean, yeah, not to delve too deep.
Okay,
into this,
we're going way off in the weeds. That's a discussion for another time. But okay, yeah, fine. Oh. Well, I guess because it undercuts my point of this, which is like, you know what? They'll throw away. Of course, they're going to throw away Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, that's a different story though, because that stuff was not real. It was only somewhat done over under the MCU aegis. Like it was different studio.
So just me personally, I don't care about canon that much. I think when you establish things in movies, and I think this show is certainly canon. Was Daredevil? No.
No,
and we know why, and with S.H.I.E.L.D., no, and we know why. But I think given a conflict, the company is going to hew towards what is best for the story that they want to tell at the time. And if that pisses off some weird fan, I don't know if it's going to hurt anybody much.
There are lines, right? Like there are places where you don't necessarily want to do it because it confuses people and alienates people, but there's little things where it's like, if only a handful of people, I mean, yeah, like recasting.
If you can
people,
make an excuse for it in some way.
Yeah. Well, wait, absolutely. That's what I mean. So Inhumans are covered. I just watched most of that season in S.H.I.E.L.D. Inhumans are covered in depth there. Do we think that that's going to be, okay, we've already established that show's not part of this continuity, but there are elements there that won't be addressed because it's pointless, right? Like bringing the fact that we've seen the Darkhold in S.H.I.E.L.D. is no more relevant than if we'd seen it in a what-if comic some other way, which is to say, if Marvel wants to tell a story and it's going to stomp on some stuff, it'll stomp on some stuff.
I agree with you on that.
Even comic books. I mean, obviously, the whole MCU is predicated on the eye of stomping on comic books.
Yeah, it's I would consider it less stomping than remixing, right? It is, right. Sure. It is taking the elements it wants to take, and it is using them the way it wants to tell it, but it's not trying to tell a comic book as a movie, because they realize when you adapt stuff, you have to adapt it, right? You don't just carbon copy it. You have to adapt it to the media that you're telling that story in.
Right.
And as we said, this show borrows a lot from not just comics mythology, but that Vision run and all that. But it's not like we read the Vision run, right? This is not a direct adaptation of that. It just, it has some echoes of it, we'll say.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess my Coven idea is out. We agree Ralph is probably the big bad, right?
I would imagine.
He could still be a red herring, but yeah. But I mean, think it's plausible.
And then there's a question of like whether or not that Major was the actual.
I wasn't sure
contractor
about that.
Or what, you know, whatever.
The aerospace engineer,
or if that Major was just delivering something from the aerospace engineer.
She did say "my guy" a few times, but that it's kind of a generic term. Although this show specifically has been very particular about that. Anytime somebody meets Darcy, if they call her Miss Lewis, it's like, if they say Dr. Lewis, they're a good person. That's it.
Right.
And if they don't, they're a jackass. And it's pretty uniform.
I think it's possible we haven't met the engineer, and we may not. I mean, I think that's also possible, something that's left out there for the future. Same way with the Ralph thing. I could easily see the last two episodes being dealing with Agatha, and then there being like a credit scene about
towards the very end we'll get whoever was really behind it. I think we'll get a flashback next week to what happened before, and then a big wrap up the following
week.
We'll see.
I've been watching a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. recently because I tried to watch the season with the Darkhold, and by accident watched the wrong season.
So I watched. Mistake.
Well, I watched. I could have just looked it up, but it's been a while since. I don't think I've ever binged it. And man, that's a good show. Season 3 is pretty great. Like, that's really solid. And then season 4 starts off with Ghost Rider, and that's when we get into the Darkhold stuff. And that's basically what I was watching last night. You're right. That prop is janky. It's really janky.
It's not great. It's not great.
Yeah. But there's an episode where, I forget, it's Fitz and Coulson, I think, are dead, or they get transported into, like, antimatter world or whatever the heck it is. And they keep replaying scenes. Like, they show a scene of two characters going over some dialogue, and then it'll cut, and it'll basically get sepia-toned. And then Coulson will be there, and they'll redo the whole scene, and Coulson or Fitz will be talking to the characters who are ignoring them, trying to get their ideas across.
Right.
It's really well, but it's like, it's got sort of that, here we go. Nailed it. That episode of TNG where Geordi and Ro are like, like they're offset in the Romulan ship and they're out of phase and they're trying to do stuff. It's basically that trope. I really liked the, magical musical montage at the end. And I would like to see a little bit more of that to flesh out exactly what's been going on. As we start to confront, okay, how are we actually going to fix this?
We don't know. What we still don't know is Agatha's motives, right? Why is she doing any of this? Why? So I think what we can agree on is she is manipulating Wanda in her grief to get her to create this reality. Because we understand that Wanda is, I would argue, still responsible for the reality, and that Agatha is just essentially using Wanda to do for her power. But we don't know why. It's unclear why this town, why is it so important, and how, if at all, how does it link in with Hayward wanting Vision? Because, I mean, is it that she's trying to get her to sort of maybe recreate the Mind Stone or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's either the kids or the Mind Stone, or, you know, I mean, there's got to be some sort of
kids, right?
Oh, wait, yeah, so that was the end of my conspiracy theory that I sent John and then forgot about, because I swear to God, I come up with conspiracy theories like I'm just, I don't know, something I do frequently. Making omelets. I think it's Dormammu or some other abstract thing, like less of an introduction of a big bad, if we even see that. But I think Wanda being a Nexus being, or like we've literally been given the word Nexus and that the worlds revolve around her. We've seen reality warp around her. We've begun to experience that portion of her power. I do believe that Agnes was legitimately surprised and shocked when one of the kids suggested that she just bring Sparky back to life, and Agnes was like, "You can do that." Because I think now in retrospect she was like, "Ooh, if you can do that, I'm in trouble because Sparky's gonna tell her."
Like, Sparky's gonna spill beans.
I don't know, but I think she was like legit like, "Uh-oh, this would be bad." But I think that the whatever, this is why I chose Dormammu, is that the reason for the children is that they are the pathway through which something can be brought through another reality and made concrete. Sort of his expression or his whatever, his, for lack of a better word, soul gets stuck in them. They become the vessel. They become his vessel on in Earth and on this reality. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Because the fact that she's bending realities and the fact that Agatha seems to be grooming her for something. I mean, the whole town does, right? It's for the children.
Yeah.
And the children are definitely the key. What does that mean? I mean, child sacrifice is a thing. Not in real life, but
and let's keep in mind that the kids themselves, right? We have the, not only do they have powers, but they're also, the child of a whatever you want to call Wanda. I mean, not going to use the word mutant because that's not right, but enhanced. A superpower, an enhanced individual and a synthesoid, which is also could be, like you said, some sort of power, maybe using them for their innate power, whether to fuel something or as vessels or what have you. I think it's clear that there's something, the kids are the end game, right? That there's something that Agatha wants from them, and that maybe this whole reality was built to bring them into being. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems plausible.
Anybody else got a totally different conspiracy theory?
Not really.
No, I mean,
I feel like we should cover our bases.
Yeah, I mean,
the only other possibility I was trying to wonder is whether or not Pietro, I mean, we see Agatha controlling him, but he also shows up at the end there, and how much agency does he have?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, he's also a possible, I mean, that whole thing could be a bit of a red herring too.
Right, so. Could explain why he looks different. Maybe he is just a totally different person. Or is he
a golem? Like a golem guardian of Agnes, something.
Right. Or is he a person who has also been overwritten, and that's why he looks different, because he's just a random dude that they picked to
maybe
and changed his mind to think he was Pietro.
Is he a character so that Monica can have a fight?
Yeah.
And a shout out to Larry again, because he noticed that the car, the license plate said P-8-em.
P-8-em, yeah.
Well, and then somebody...
Which I looked at because I was kind of, looking for stuff, and I looked at that and it didn't register with me.
Yeah. Larry's doing good. Larry's doing really good work.
Yeah. I would like to note also Kieran in the Incomparable Member Slack, Kieran Healy, pointed out he had the scene where Vision's talking to Agnes in the car last week, and the license plate on the car is a hex code for the color a shade of red. Why that particular shade of red? I don't know.
I noticed the car. The car that she's in last week is like a 1980s gold Volvo, and then the car that's parked in her driveway in this episode is a modern
oh, that's nice.
Volvo gold Volvo sports utility kind of thing.
That's pretty funny.
Which I thought was like a great touch, and I know that they moved production from Atlanta to LA because of COVID, because they halted it for a while and then they moved it to LA, I think. And one of the things that I noticed in this episode is that when I told you guys that already, I think, but when they're doing the whole thing where she's driving, trying to drive the truck into the hex, there's that group of sword soldiers that are sitting there. It's like there are two people who are sitting there at computers at the table, and they change.
Oh, do they?
Like at one point in the beginning, because I noticed they were using HP computers, and I was like, oh, there's some interesting product placement, because we were talking about the product placement, like the orange juice and all that stuff, and then like, you know, like a minute and a half later, they're blank. Still gray computers, but they have cameras in the upper corner now. They're larger, and there's a circle over the center instead of the HP logo. And then I look a little closer, and I notice the actors are different.
had to reshoot, and they couldn't get the original.
Sort of similar, but they're clearly different actors.
I think funny. That might have been in just our chat, John, because you sent those two images to me. And I'm like, yeah, that's weird, but, you know, it's, I guess maybe it was the second unit director who filmed them, and maybe they didn't take enough Polaroids or, you know, like, be able to reset the scene. And I didn't even notice, despite you being like, hey, check these out, isn't that weird? I didn't even notice that the actors had changed. It didn't even occur to me. Like, I was like, well, the background looks different and, like, whatever, you know?
Well, it's like I was spending my time like, oh, when the electrical truck pulls across the road and it's doing, you know, work on it, oh, there's something written on the side of the truck.
I know. I looked at that, too.
Yeah, it's just an electrical contractor from Atlanta.
You know what I was really excited about? When they drove away in the funnel cake truck, you'd call that out on the previous show. You're like, hey, there's a funnel cake truck. And I'm like, I don't even know what a funnel cake is, but Dan seems to be excited.
The name of it, the name of Funnel of Love is just...
Funnel of Love is hilarious, yeah.
So great.
Yeah, I like, there's a lot of little bits in there. Like, I liked, people were talking about how, was it out of character for Darcy to punch the strongman guy? And I'm like, but that's the sword agent who was harassing her in, like, the first episode. Right. He's just been transformed, so I can totally believe her punching him in the face.
It is not out of character at all. I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, I watched Thor 2, John's favorite movie ever. And at one point, like it's when he just first appears on the scene, and she's Darcy's there with what's her name?
Jane.
Oh my god, thank you. Jane's off doing something, and she's just like, oh, she just touches his chest again, being like, look at you all muscly.
Still
like,
all muscly. Like, space.
Yeah.
Space is fine.
Would she punch somebody? 100%. That's within
especially
our character.
That guy.
For sure.
Yeah. That guy was
that guy, yeah, right, A, that right. guy
that,
had it coming.
That guy's been asking to be punched for several episodes now.
A, that guy had it coming. B, she just got, like, her mind messed with. And, you know, she manages to walk away from it reasonably unscathed, because it'd been a matter of minutes, I guess, you know. Like, hadn't been that long. B, we just saw her not putting up with any guff from Vision. So, yeah. And that guy's a jackass. He deserves a sock on the jaw, for sure.
Yeah.
I've got a betting pool I'd like to throw out.
Oh, cool.
Which identity do you think Monica, which name do you think she'll go with? Because there's a lot. Oh. There's a lot of options.
Photon, 100%.
I would think Photon.
So I saw a lot of people suggesting Spectrum, which is one of her more recent ones.
Because we saw Spectrum. Yeah.
Well, I mean, her powers seem to be fairly consistent. I mean, so Photon was hinted at by her mother's call sign in Captain Marvel.
Right. Exactly. And that's I agree.
I think that's quite plausible. I think Spectrum is her. Spectrum is also her newest one, I think, as of 2013. So that might also be a possibility because of the relation to her powers, and also it's just the most recent one. Other options include Pulsar, Daystar, Scepter, Lady of Light, Monica Marvel, and Sun Goddess. All great names. She has had a lot of names.
You know what I think they're going to call her? Monica Rambeau.
I think you're probably right.
They're just going to call her Monica, and that's going to be it.
Well, that was the joke about, you know, early on where
Scarlet Witch.
Like, does she have any nicknames or anything?
I actually did have one other conspiracy theory, which it's simply based on the line, do you think this is what you deserve? is the possibility that Agnes hates her because she accidentally killed someone that she loved or something like that.
That's possible.
Because it ties into, like, you know, many themes that have run through these movies.
The guilt and
from Civil War.
Right, like privilege of superpowered people. And no, absolutely. It's a possibility. I think the issue there is
I can't think of who it would be.
And Agatha, actually, she clearly has powers, right? So that's the big question is, like, if she has powers, how does that, does it really link into a mundane story, or is this going to be based in sort of the magical element? And I can see your point there, but I'm not convinced that that's where we're going.
You know, I don't put a lot of, you know, credence to that.
The flip side of that,
I just threw it out there because it occurred to me.
The flip side of that is Agatha they're trying to help. Like, is she being a therapist in that moment?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, maybe her whole manipulating things behind the scene has been well intentioned in a weird. Although it's really hard to say killing Sparky is well intentioned. So they're gonna,
I'm not sure Sparky was really alive.
Yeah,
Sparky really real. I'm
Sparky
not sure.
Sparky was the big bad, and she did it. She did him in. So you know, job done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, having a cicada creeping around your house is kind of weird, too. Or whatever that was. I thought it was a cockroach at first.
It looks like a big fly.
Yeah, which is what a cicada looks like, which is also a symbol of rebirth. Like, because they have that weird seven-year hatching cycle.
Like Vulcan.
Sorry, I grew up in cicada territory. So that's all. It's weird. It's like when those things are singing in August.
Yeah, we have them around here too. I thought you were making it sound like a gang though. Yeah, I grew up in cicada territory. It's tough.
No. But you know,
they go on these crime streaks, but only every 7 years.
That buzz.
Don't get caught wearing locust colors over in cicada territory.
That's loud.
That buzz at the end of summer is like, we've only got a few weeks left before I got to go back to school. Like that kind of, you know, and you're finding all of their, my closest friends their growing husks. Up, the husks just stuck to the trees. Yeah. Like they had like pine trees right side of their house. Like we would take the husks off and like stick them to each other. And like a kick me sign. There was a lot of them. They're weird. They're weird creatures. And sometimes there's a lot of them and some years there's less of them. And yeah, they're creepy and they sing loud and I don't know. I do know that they're a symbol of rebirth and regeneration just because of their weird mating cycle.
Okay.
We've learned a lot about cicadas this week. Welcome to Cicada.
Well, I think it's relevant to rebirth being, you know, what's happening to Vision and potentially Wanda.
Yeah. Right?
And certainly the children and potentially Ralph, you know.
And now, so I want to throw out there one or two things. One, so I don't know as much about Agatha Harkness from the comics, but what I've given to understand based on what I've read is that she's one of those characters who is sometimes a good guy and sometimes a bad guy, depending on sort of the situation she's in.
I think she's mostly good, though.
Yeah, I went and sort of, I didn't do a deep dive on it, but I looked it up. Do you want to give the history, John? I feel like I've been going on.
I don't know it very well, but I mean, she started out as the nanny for the Richards.
Yes, Franklin.
Kids.
Yes, Franklin Richards, it says.
Yeah. And then slowly is revealed to be a witch somehow.
It also interesting.
I don't remember. I mean, I remember reading comics, and then there's this weird old lady sitting there, like knitting in the corner. Like, what? Who is that? What is going on here?
She apparently also has a son named Nicholas Scratch, who is a character, who is a wizard and supervillain, Fantastic Four foe and Patsy Walker foe. So, take that for what you will.
Sure.
And I guess Scratch also has tie-ins not only with Mephisto, but also Dormammu. So lots of stuff potentially happening there.
Yeah. I don't know. I am inclined to believe that they're going to take a bunch of concepts and stuff them into one.
Yeah,
I think they're going to have to. Yeah. In the MCU, I'm less convinced we're going to get Inhumans and just more convinced that we're going to get flavors of mutant.
Yeah, I think that's going to depend on where they decide to go with, you know, the X-Men tie-ins, right? Like,
yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, and the existing, I don't know if they're in production yet, but not the Inhumans movie that I think that got canceled.
Eternals.
The Eternals. Thank you. That's what I'm thinking of. Right. Yeah. Right. Like, that's going to set up a lot of that. Also, the Inhumans were, at least according to the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff I just watched, and I believe that's true to the comics, they're like Kree experiments.
Yeah, it has something to do with their like years and years and years ago. They did the whole pterogenesis thing and latent genetic something. I don't remember.
Yeah,
right. Like when we were cave people, they were like, oh, "Here's a species we can experiment on, and let's go do that." Giving rise to Inhumans and Mutants? Was that it? Is that the... Do they tie that in?
No, I think the mutants
are distinct.
Distinct. Yeah,
they're
completely
just like
distinct.
Genetic. They're just genetic
human evolution.
That happen.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever... I mean, if they...
So an Inhuman is like
they did,
a...
They shouldn't have. Let's put it that way.
Right. So like an Inhuman is a forced mutant. Not a forced, like a...
Well, it's a mutant.
A genetically engineered, altered human via Kree technology, whereas a mutant, like a human mutant, is a naturally arising phenomenon.
Exactly.
That's the distinction.
Yes. The humans were like, there's intervention from an alien race that caused it, as opposed to just naturally, developing.
Yeah. But you can see how those two concepts are, you know what, close enough for rock and roll. Like,
right. Yes.
We're gonna stick them together. Yeah.
Again, right. I don't know if they're rival street gangs or what, but...
Right.
They all have powers, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think the big question as we get into the last two episodes for me is just like, this has been said to directly set up the next Doctor Strange movie, which obviously has the multiverse comment. We got the Nexus thing this week, which suggests a multiverse component. Seems not implausible that a villain could show up here who might transition into the villain, like the big bad of the Doctor Strange movie. And that Wanda gets recruited because she has the ability to traverse or exist in multiple realities, etc. So lots of stuff in there that feels like it's going to tie together.
I wonder if the Doctor Strange movie, partly because of its name, isn't necessarily just going to have... Well, I don't know. It seems like it might be the kind of thing where they skip across a whole bunch of universes and they have a bunch of like different problems dealing with that stuff. But the real conflict is within. You know what I mean?
It's deep. I like that.
Yeah. Like, why am I such a dick? Because he's kind
Something
of a
like
dick.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he's definitely.
Move.
Yeah. I mean, he's like Tony Stark level dick, but he hasn't had a redemption at all, right?
That's why they didn't get along.
Yeah, well, 100%. Like they're both overachieving people at the top of their fields who were. I watched
with Doctor strange beards.
I watched Doctor Strange again too. I've been doing a lot of homework for this show, and I call it homework, but basically it's avoiding doing actual work, and I just happen to be at home while doing it. At one point he's bust up his hands and his girlfriend, whose name I can't remember because they woefully underwrote that part, she's like, look, you know, even when you were working, you were spending all your money, it's not like you're keeping it, and you're just going crazy. And that's effectively a similar kind of playboyish...
Her name is Dr. Palmer.
Yes.
I don't forget, her first name. Whatever.
Christine.
I knew it was something Ean, but I couldn't think of what...
Yeah, that was I hope they do something better with her. She's getting a real Jane Foster treatment.
Bringing her back to me suggests... If I were Rachel McAdams, maybe they could pay me enough that even if they didn't do much with my character, I would come back. But I also feel like I would be tempted to be like... I'll come back, but only if you do this character better.
Yeah. I would think.
That has to be what happened with Natalie Portman, right? She's like, you know what? Screw this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like,
I don't know if you've noticed. I'm Natalie Portman.
I have better things I can do. I don't need the money, and I have better things I can do.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more thing I want to call out. What do you got?
One more thing I want to call out, which is using the scene of the sword agents running away as a comedy bit.
Yes.
Which was last week's sort of terror moment, right? The thing starts expanding and gulping up more people and turning them into clowns and stuff like that. And then they play it for like, we've all done it, right?
Yeah.
We all expand the imaginary boundaries of our world. And then they show them running and screaming.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
That was hilarious.
There are some legit good comedy moments this week, I have to say. Especially, I mean, as it shifts into a more modern sitcom, right? Like the humor gets a little more...
It's funnier, yeah.
I mean, it's not even that it's just funnier. It's just it's more in line with like
our sense of humor, I think,
because of it's of the era.
Yeah, humor by its very nature has a cultural component, right? Like, you can appreciate, the Three Stooges, but at the same time, you're like, it's not quite landing now. I can see why that's sort of a foundational piece of comedy for you know, where we are now, but it's not funny anymore. I do think that we're going to have to see a little bit more behind the scenes. We're going to need it to rewind and get a little bit more scene setting. One thing I did want to bring up just before we sort of wrap up, maybe, is what's Hayward doing? What is he going to launch? Is it missiles? That seems weird. Monica, he's also way too close for like a really big bomb.
Monica suggests he's going to just essentially destroy the whole town. Like she tells Wanda essentially he's going to try to blow up the entire town to stop her. That's her understanding, right? We don't know that that's true, but she is convinced that he's going to do something that's on a big scale, right? Because he thinks it's worth it to essentially destroy the town.
Yeah.
Presumably to reclaim Vision, who I guess because he's vibranium, is he just not going to be affected? Like there's a lot of questions in there. Well, like he wants Vision back. What is he going to do that's going to stop this? That's also, you know, not going to destroy Vision. Like maybe he's going to shoot a laser at Wanda from space. Is that his plan?
I mean, I don't know, weird mandroids like built on War Machine armor or something like that, which leads into Armor Wars. Like there's a bunch of things that comic books can do that would be make sense. What I don't want to see is, you know, like a nuclear missile coming down and then having, you know, Green Arrow on the roof with a bow and arrow stopping that.
poor Felicity.
Or not stopping it.
Felicity is like, you know what? To their credit, they gave her like a few episodes when it's like, oh my God, I just nuked a city. But mostly she's fine. I don't really want that. I don't think that's... I don't know what the payoff is here. I don't see a giant battle going down, despite the fact that we got a whole bunch of superpowered people here, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of why I expected maybe the Monica Rambeau versus Pietro thing. Maybe a payoff that we see that gives us like, oh, here's a weird superhero scrap. But really, like the expressions of power have been pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, besides creating the entire reality, but there hasn't been a lot of violence with it, you know? Except what Monica's done to, Wanda's done to Monica.
Right. Yeah.
I don't see that getting... I don't want to say she's been treating her with kid gloves, because guess what? She got, like, that hurt. Like, you know, she's been treating her very, very roughly. But you get the sense that she could just atomize her if she really wanted to, right? Like she was kicking the crap out of Thanos. So she's kind of limited. She's like not, she's serious, but she's, you know,
well, maybe
she's not out for blood.
Maybe before, but we also don't know what exactly Monica's powers allow her to do either. So, because they're mentioned.
She doesn't either.
But one of the things mentioned in her power set is essentially the ability to transform into energy, which, you know, might make, which it certainly would help explain why her scans didn't show anything, right? If she's just energy now instead of matter, and why she could get through the barrier. And so, you know, even if Wanda like smacks her around, maybe that she can still re-corporealize herself or so. Mm-hmm. I think it's also, I mean, like we still have the open questions. I loved one of my favorite other bits this week, comedy wise, was Vision telling Darcy, I have questions. And she's like, I've got answers. And he starts asking her questions. She's like, I don't know that. I don't know that.
She does not actually have any answers particularly.
Yep. Yeah. She does have some.
To fill him in on his past.
Yeah. She basically gives him the synopsis of Endgame, which is like, you know.
But I enjoyed that she just like, because Vision's first question is, are my children safe? And he's like,
I love that.
I don't know. Like, and who is Pietro? Like,
No. He asks, who is that fake Pietro? Who is the imposter Pietro? Which I have in my notes because... How does he know he was an imposter?
Does he say that? I thought he just asked who the
Pietro was. I'm not sure he said that, but
he did.
But regardless, he knows because he's met him before. I mean,
he didn't remember anything.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, you know, he was there in the room with Pietro and Wanda when they, you know, when he was created.
Right, but he doesn't remember anything before Westview.
So oh, right.
I know, but I think, but he remembers that. kind of remembers people, I think, and might possibly remember Pietro some, you know, in some way, simply because it's Wanda's brother.
I forgot that they shared that scene together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He also is a robot because he remembers everyone. Like, I didn't think he would remember Darcy because, like, he was being pulled apart at the time. So, but, you know, when you're a synthesoid, maybe your memory is a lot better than my memory. I would be distracted if my body was being ripped back into some sort of magical hex. And I
that's just you, Dan.
That's just me.
Yeah. God, what a weenie. Yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for.
Well, wait. Yeah. No, we don't. No, we don't.
Because... I'm going to roll the credits right over you, guy.
Yeah. Right. Okay. While you're rolling the credits, should I explain our rating system?
I suppose so.
I guess it's been asked.
We actually had a request to explain the rating system. Here's the thing. It's
foolhardy.
Dumb. Foolhardy. It's dumb. It's intentionally dumb. I'll tell you why. I know Dan at least agreed with me, and I suspect John does too. Giving rating systems to creative work is dumb. That's it. That's why we do a dumb thing. Here's why. Here's what the actual rating system is. Biff is good. Biff is a long-suffering henchman from Arrow Season 4 who knew Ollie was undercover, told his boss. His boss told him he was an idiot. Then Ollie killed him, and then he came back as a ghost, and then Ollie killed him again. Like, this is a hard-working henchman union card-carrying guy, salt of the earth, if your job's to salt the earth. Like, he's a bad guy, but he's good at it.
Yeah. Right. He does bad things, but he does them smartly.
Right. He's like, it's like he's not powered. He's just trying to do a good job being a bad guy. That's all. So for whatever reason, that's our highest level. Then we've got John Jr., which, given this show, I mean, we're rewriting people left, right, and center, but the concept of John Jr. was that originally a character on Arrow, again, had a daughter named Sarah Jr., and the Flash rewrote reality, and she got turned into John Jr., which would have been wonderful if that was a choice that person had made, but it wasn't. It was just an arbitrary rewriting of reality, so John Jr. is like, that's weird, but we can't really blame a baby for that. So it's in the middle. And then we've got Alex, who's also from Season 4 of Arrow, and he's a clipboard carrying nerd who's got nothing better to do. Somehow Thea, Ollie's younger sister, is dating him when she should be dating murderous DJs. So those are our three
based
levels.
Based on the rules of the universe.
Those are the three levels. They're dumb, and we should probably revisit them. I think, and so at the end of every episode, we assign one of those three values to the episode, mostly as an exercise in summing it up and saying how we feel about it. On good runs like this, they're all Biffs. This isn't a Biff. This is a Wanda. A new step, a new evolution.
Also, part of the rating system is Guy throws in a random rating at the end of every episode.
That does happen.
Because it doesn't matter, and it's silly. This is a Wanda. This is wonderful, if you'll excuse me.
What if I won't?
It's really great. Here's the thing about this show. We gave plenty of episodes of Arrow Biffs, and they were fun, and they were enjoyable. Some shows are beyond our pay grade. Watchmen, I don't think we're going to touch that because we like to make jokes, and Watchmen's just, I would have a hard time making jokes about that. Yeah. I think it's something that everybody should watch. This show is really, really smart, very incredibly well done, like impeccable detail, thoughtful, considered. I don't think everybody necessarily likes the story that's being told, or maybe the weird entitlement that Wanda has, but I think that's part of the whole trope. It is a show worth talking about, and it is a show that I would honestly suggest random people watch. I think people can get something out of this that doesn't require them to be comic book fans. They will find it trippy as hell, but I think they could watch it and enjoy it. And so in that way, it sort of transcends the goofy three-level system that I created out of whole cloth for no good reason. And I really encourage people to watch this show, and I'm really looking forward to see how it concludes. And if we only get one season of this, I'm happy. I think that's fine. I think it's telling a story in an interesting way. And when it concludes, and if it concludes and it wraps it all up, perfect. Move on to doing something else. Equally good. It's wonderful. And I encourage more of this sort of work.
Yeah. I just want to be clear that Guy is the Wanda of the rating system. He created it out of thin air. It keeps expanding and absorbing more things.
Yeah.
Dan and I into his weird, twisted universe.
Yep. Yeah. Wait till you find the level where Dan and you are on. I don't know.
Or we're clowns. We're mimes.
Which end of the spectrum that gets on. Yeah.
Speaking of which, we should do a rating.
Okay.
Who wants to?
I just did. Wanda.
I thought Guy did his rating.
John, you wanna perspective?
It's another biff. It's another in a continuing series of biffs. I've enjoyed the whole run of this show, and this is, I mean, I think the talking to the camera and just the weird bits that they infuse a sitcom with, like where she, you know, is asked if she deserves it and is like, you're not supposed to be talking, what, like, are completely delightful. I don't have any complaints for sure.
Yeah. Honorary Biff award to Paul Bettany for Vision sitting in that chair outside the funnel of love.
And then getting up and walking away, like at just the right time.
Yeah. With the boom mic.
Off the microphone. Yeah.
The boom mic doing here. Yeah. I loved it.
Which was fascinating to me because the meta, like, reality aspect of it, because that scene is immediately followed by him floating out of the van where he is with Darcy, and you're like, okay, so those things are kind of happening at the same time.
Is it in his mind? Happening?
Yeah, it's right. Or just reality, like the reality is shifting. I love it. It's weird and bizarre, and yes, so I will echo John's biff. I agree, this run has been a biff. I agree with the guy that I think I would be willing to put money down on this being a one season thing. And I think that's probably a way of a lot of the Marvel stuff is going to go. I think we will have some stuff with multiple seasons when it doesn't necessarily rise directly to the level of like films, like some of these characters who are starting out in the Marvel shows, like She-Hulk and Moon Knight and Ms. Marvel, like some of them will appear in the films, but I think, you know, some of those might be more set up for recurring, you know, like multiple seasons,
And it's great because, like I said last week, you know, catching Karen up, and we haven't started watching. We just finished Endgame, and we haven't started watching this yet. But she's gonna love. I think she's really gonna love this show because she hates the punch 'em up stuff. She watches for the characters, and there's a lot of great characterization in all of these movies. But you know, when it gets to a big fight scene, her brain shuts off. She's kind of like, and this doesn't have that.
No,
you know, like there's no like. I mean, we're. 8 episodes in or 7 episodes in, and there hasn't been like a, I mean, you know, Monica got punched, but that's about it.
Was more of a be gone, like it,
yeah, right, right. I mean, that was
it happened to be visual and on screen because it's a superhero show, but it may as well just be like, get out of my face,
it's the emotional content of it was what's important, right? And like that is the fun stuff you can do with the TV show, is not everything. By definition, not everything can turn into an action set piece, right? Like some of it's a budget constraint, but some of it's just the storytelling method. You can't have a big action set piece. Certainly not every episode. You can throw one in every once in a while, maybe. But I agree. I don't think that's the way we're going. I think Falcon and Winter Soldier will probably see more stunt work, more combat. But even that, I think, is probably going to be smaller scale by a lot, right? So I think, so it's interesting. You know, we've still got, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before that happens. And that's going to be another sort of data point and just sort of seeing how Marvel is approaching the TV series thing. But I think they're pretty wide open, right? Like they want the tone to feel consistent, like within the bounds of the shows that they've created and the world that they've created. They don't want to go, I think, totally off the wall, right? Like they're not going to go DC style, like Grimdark or whatever for the MCU stuff, but they are going to be able to play within that sandbox. There's a lot of room for variation, a lot of room for experimentation, as we saw in the movies, right? Like, you know, you can put up Winter Soldier against, you know, Ant-Man, right? And it's like, there are things those have in common, but they're also very different in terms of the stories they're telling and the scale on which they're telling those stories.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. Cool stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason we say fight, fight, fight when a fight happens, right? Like, it's enjoyable.
It's fun to watch, but it's boring to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So that is all we have for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about WandaVision episode 8, the penultimate episode. I can't believe we only have 2 episodes left.
Any bets on titles?
Oh, yeah. We've done a lot of... they've had a lot of really great references. So we've done like...
Something like a clip show or something? Like or flashback? Something about flashback?
I think the last one has to be called finale or something. Or curtains?
The one
or
where it ends. Yeah, I don't
know. The one where it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think there's a lot of possibilities. I love the self-referential titles.
I don't think we're hopping forward in time anymore. We're not going another decade anymore because Wanda's sort of lost control of things. We're picking up in that basement, or we're going back in time and seeing how things happened.
Yeah. Right, like sort of that clip show at the end where Agatha's doing everything. We might jaunt back through some of the previous incarnations. But yeah, I don't know. I'm psyched. We thank all of you for listening out there as always. And of course, I'd like to thank my co-hosts, John Maltz. Thanks for being here.
I can't be anywhere else because you're creating this universe.
Stay here.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
Whoa. I'm just going to pop my shackles and turn you down for a date, Dan.
No one is having the lobster this week. Readers, thank you for following along with the transcripts. We hope you are staying well and enjoying the show, and we'll see you next time.